it's RTFM time once again. I'm still Aaron King.
Aaron King, fourth edition.
Fourth edition. I'm 40 now.
Hooray. I'm Max, soon to be no longer Halifax edition.
No more. Yeah, you can't send Max messages saying, hey, Halifax Max, what's up? I know you've all been doing that. I see you in the Discord.
You have to stop. It will make me sad.
Another thing that makes Max sad is that today we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition.
I'm not sad. I'm interested.
All right.
In why you like it.
A little background. It was released in 2008, which is 34 years after original Dungeons & Dragons, published by Wizards of the Coast. You know them, you hate them. Lots of designers on this one. Big ol' table of contributors, but at the top of the list are Rob Hinesu, Andy Collins, and James Wyatt. Rob Hinesu is one of the co-designers of 13th Age, which we, one of our first episodes, was that like episode 3?
Something in there. Very, it feels an age ago.
Yes.
A 13th age ago.
I was 13 when we recorded that episode. Yeah, we're looking at the player's handbook only, just because that's already long enough.
Yeah, so many books.
I played this game for many months, possibly over a year, as it was coming out. I worked at a game store, so I got them all super cheap. We had a subscription to the character building software. We had miniatures. We had a wet erase grid. And it's one of my favorite gaming experiences. So that I'm extremely biased here.
Yes, which is why I'm kind of excited. I have not played 4th edition. I skipped 4th edition because I was too deep into original Pathfinder / 3.5 at the time. And was like, screw you, Wizards. I'm not buying all new books. Especially because the way that 4th edition was pitched to me as somebody who was like already playing a lot of D&D was like, it's simplified D&D. Largely targeted at new players. And I was like, well, that's not us. So like, we don't need to do that. Like, I don't need to put any work into switching. Yeah.
I was actually thinking like, I love this game, but I would never be like, oh, this is your first RPG. Let's play Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition.
I mean, let's play Dungeons & Dragons, period. But
right, right.
Yeah, it's not, which is funny because like going, so this is the first time I've read it and going into it, I was like, this is what Wizards thinks is beginner friendly. What a load of shit. But yes, I feel like because we've talked about my edition and now we're on your edition, the like it would be good to overview what you think are like the major significant changes that were one of the reasons that you were like were the reasons you were into it.
Yeah. I didn't like 3.5. I'd only played a few times, really enjoyed who I was playing with, but I was like, when it came time to like assign my skill points in 3.5, every level, I just groaned. Picking feats, I groaned. So yeah, the major changes. One, no gnomes. Get the fuck out of here, gnomes.
Rude.
We're making room for the tiefling and the dragonborn.
And the Eladrin?
Yeah, this is the first edition where tieflings and dragonborns were like the mainline races. Carried over into 5th edition. Also out, barbarian, bard, druid, sorcerer, monk. Get the fuck out of here. But we do have warlock and warlord. The war brothers. I don't know. There are 30 levels of progression. And they are 10 levels each of the heroic, paragon, and epic tiers. With kind of different character options, GM advice, stuff like that for each tier. And every ability is its own little ability. It's like everyone gets spells. Everyone has powers that they can use at will, once an encounter or once a day. At will, you can just do every time. And none of them are I roll to hit, and then I roll for damage. They all come with some kind of I roll to hit, and if I hit, I knock him prone, or I give a bonus to my ally, or I get to make a free hide stealth roll as part of the roll, stuff like that. So I think a big thrust of this game's design was, let's make everyone equally fun and engaging to play, as opposed to the traditional, like, until level 5 as a fighter, whatever, you're just rolling to hit, which is an unfair summary, but I think people know what I mean. People have seen those criticisms. And it was pretty explicitly meant to be played on a grid. A lot of abilities, heavy measuring. You don't just knock someone back 5 feet. You knock them back 1 square. Allies within 10 squares of you get a +2 on saves versus whatever. Pretty impossible to play Theater of the Mind.
Brain also was reading that and kept trying to backwards translate it. Like, oh, my speed is 5 squares. Does that mean it? Like, I was like, does that mean it's 25 feet? And I was like, no, D&D must get out of my brain.
Right. It's like how KFC doesn't stand for Kentucky Fried Chicken anymore. The squares do not equal feet. They're just the squares. You mm-hmm. just get to move on the squares.
It's just the fucking squares. Which is better. To be clear, it is better.
I think they made a lot of great streamlining choices in this game. I do not think it's an easy game to teach people.
Still has fucking feats.
Still has feats. The feats are fun. I do like a lot of the feats.
Why aren't they powers?
We can get into that for sure. And yeah, I mean, the idea these days, the idea of like me having to set up a map and everything for a game, I would just never want to do. I mean, I would want to do. I do want to play this game. But in my worst depression self, the idea of like instead of just having a half page notes and I'm ready to go, I also have to have a map, stuff like that. Boo.
I miss maps a lot.
I like it. I like them. But, you know, I don't have a gamer basement. I have a basement. It's shared with my upstairs neighbors. Sometimes people sleep down there and I don't know who they are. So they're
waiting to play map right, games I guess that's, on a grid. They're waiting for you down there. They are a gamer. It is right. A gamer basement. You just are not gamer enough to recognize it for what it is.
Game recognized game. I should be hanging out with my basement neighbors.
I used to always use the the map tiles. I have like a couple packs of like the flippable map tiles.
I have many packs of them.
Yeah, and those are the thing where like they are very useful and still fun because they look better than like a drawn map, but I have a lot of fond drawn map memories, recognizing Same. that doesn't mean that I will ever return to that kind of play.
I think that is my broad overview. I think they do, I will say, I enjoy the layouts. I think they make an effort, whether that succeeds or not, they make an effort to teach the game. The chapters are laid out in a semi-sensible way. Each chapter starts with, here's what we're about to tell you. We will be telling it to you in these terms. Here's an example. It guides you through the text much closer to an instruction manual than like, welcome to the times of old, Grand Adventure. Some people hate that. Some people think it's like kind of sanitized language, which I understand. But I think when you're throwing as many kind of abilities and options at players as this game does, streamlining that language is really helpful.
It does, however, not go over combat until page 264. So there are a lot of moments. One of the things that I had a hard time with was because I was like, oh, I know the combat. Like, my coming to this is like, oh, I'm looking for changes, right?
Right.
And like what functions differently, and combat is one of the things that functions differently. And so I would be like reading about an ability, and it would use a word that the book hadn't introduced yet because all of that is in the combat section.
Again, they do make an effort. Like they say, like, here are like a bunch of,
it wasn't like
key,
every
here
word.
Are some keywords and stuff. And they try to explain it. Yeah. I think that's like, I mean, and they're like, when you make your character, you will start with ability scores, chapter 1, then choose a race, chapter 2, then choose this other thing, chapter 3, then choose this other thing, back to chapter 2. Like, I think in a game this big, you have to just kind of separate stuff out and say, like, well, we can't introduce everything in order in a way that makes it easy to read.
And maybe I am an outlier in wanting an explanation of how the game works before making choices that will affect how the game works, right? Like, mm-hmm. I would like to be explained. I would like to have combat explained to me. This is such a in the weeds. It doesn't matter. You can just flip to the combat chapter. But in the laying out of learning, like, right. If combat is the thing this game does, which I think, I realize is contentious, but I think that is what D&D is for. I think that's where it's good when it can be good. I think it is horrible at everything else, which doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means there are better things to do than everything else.
Yeah.
And when that's what it's doing, I just wanted it to be explained before I'm going into, like, reading about the five different strikes that I can choose as a fighter or whatever.
I think it's the classic, like, a lot of people come to D&D to make their cool OC. Mm-hmm. And so they might not even ever play. And right. So it's like, just give me the character creation stuff. I think you're right. Like, if someone is learning this game, tabula rasa, coming in from board games, maybe.
Well, it's also like part of the D&D ethos where it's like, you don't need to know this player. Your GM will totally know will have an encyclopedia in their brain of how combat works. So why would you need to learn combat rules? Which is like also when D&D is bad, is when nobody learns any of the rules. I have so many hangups. So many D&D hangups that are not 4E's fault, that are just like D&D in general's fault.
Yeah. I think giving characters these abilities with very clear terms and keywords does make an attempt to put some of that responsibility back on players, right? Totally. Another big change is that magic items are in the player's handbook instead of the DM's book. And players are kind of expected to say, like, these are roughly the ones that I want. There are no, and this gets into the DMG stuff, but it's never like, give them a random magic item. Because these numbers are, in my opinion, like, so tightly balanced, you can't just give them a random item. Like, you have to give them something that leans into their class and their role, which we didn't even get into. Maybe we will, maybe we won't, but...
Yeah, and I do think that, like, breaking everything out into a little ability is good, especially when you're like, you could just make these little cards. I'm sure there are cards. I'm sure they exist. Except maybe not, because D&D 4th edition bombed, so they moved on pretty quick.
There were cards, and there was, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get into this because it's not part of the book, but they had a digital character creator.
No, fuck that. I think, nope, I refuse.
Yeah.
I think they're super helpful and they should exist. Let me be clear about that right up front. I refuse any game that requires that to make it doable or like.
Right. It didn't. Smooth, I'm not saying it required it, but.
I feel like D&D does generally require digital tools to make it.
Right.
Like, the only reason that people I know even think D&D, like the people I know who like 5th edition only like it because their only exposure to the rules is Beyond. They don't even buy the books. They don't read the books. They don't pay attention to the mechanics. They just use D&D Beyond. And they're like, well, I don't understand. It's so simple. And I'm like, right, because you're not GMing. and because you're interfacing purely with this digital tool. I also really, I'm old school. I'm old school. I generally don't love having a lot of screens at a table.
Yeah. So the digital tool, this is why I liked it. You would go through and make your character, and then it would give you a printable PDF that just had your abilities on it.
Yes.
So it was, I mean, it was published at such a weird time, right? 2008, 2009. The expectation, there was no expectation that everyone would have a laptop or a phone. A lot of people might, a lot of people did, but they were like,
but everyone has a printer.
Right, here is a way. I mean, I was, like I said, working at a game store, and we'd print out everyone's character sheets every level up and like, you know, take them to the table, and most of us didn't have phones. The GM might have a laptop with notes and stuff on it, but that was kind of it. So like, yes, I said, I'm incredibly biased in this.
I think this is like, I have a lot of improvements over. I'm not like fighting you on the improvements on it. I just, these are general D&D comments that I feel.
Absolutely.
I also, and like now everybody does have a phone, so it's like, sure, why not use it? I guess I just like don't. I am kind of old. I am old school. I am old school about friendship time, guys. I'm ancient. I'm the one who's turned 40 this week. in my heart, I just have this, like, I don't want 700 million notifications going off when I'm trying to, like, sit around doing a focused activity with buds.
I'm the same. I mean, that's why I like I said, I like to have my notes, like, handwritten on a half page, right? I like to have a physical book to look at. Part not because I'm, like, anti-technology, but, like, my retention is terrible when I'm reading off of a screen.
Technology's bad also.
I like to take a big thing and, like, put it into the language that matters to me the most, which often involves writing it down on a sheet of paper. I like the pace of writing. Like, it slows me down and helps me think. I love digital tools. Like, thank God. I mean, this podcast would not exist without them. I love downloading the hottest new PDFs from itch.io. But I, you know, it's a balance. I think it's good to have physical media time as well.
Yes. Agree. Yeah, I don't know. There's cool stuff in here. It's D&D. It's cool. What's does the D&D thing? I do think that, like, I probably would have felt more positively about D&D if I had left, like, from fourth edition.
Yeah.
Or had, like, I do think that Wizards really shit the bed on fourth edition, not the designing of it, but, like, they moved on so fast and they pushed it so little, and they really, like, promoted it poorly, I feel like. As a person who is, like, deeply into I go to the game shop every week, I'm the person who spends hours, like, crafting scenarios or whatever for my group, and, like, fourth edition came out at a time when I was playing weekly or bi-weekly, and in the, like, I have been playing for a decade weekly or bi-weekly, so, like, I was deep in it.
Yeah.
And they were just like, fourth edition, we changed everything. We made it simpler. It's for new players. And you're like, okay, but all right, yeah, fine.
Whenever. I was in a town of 5,000 people. The store I worked at was the only kind of game. We had books, we had DVDs, we had CDs, we had new CDs. People would come for the new CD releases. And we didn't really carry role-playing games. There were a few old ones that were, like, special orders that people hadn't picked up. A few people would come in and, like, say, I want this new third edition D&D book that's coming out or whatever. But we didn't really keep them in stock. And then when fourth edition came out, enough people asked about it that we had, like, two copies of the box set of the three core books. And then, like, you know, that was it. And that was way more. There was no culture of role-playing games there. I know a few people that played 3.5, but it was not, yeah, I don't know. And so I guess all I mean is you have a much more directly lived experience in that. I was just like, oh, this sounds cool. This is cool. I can get in on the ground floor. I've played a little, you know, I had read AD&D growing up. I bought it with my allowance, but I'd never been deep in any campaign or any, like, community.
How deep I was in 3.5.
How many inches of books did you have?
So many inches. I guess that's a phrase we could pull out of me saying. But yeah, I was many inches deep into.
There it is. There it is.
3.5. Also, but I had switched to Pathfinder at this point because Pathfinder was a better version, like a good version of 3.5. The best version of 3.5 that could exist was Pathfinder. And so I also not only had bought all the three books, but then had bought all the 3.5 books and then had bought all the Pathfinder books. So it was going to be a hard sell to get me to buy another set of books. But yeah, I do feel sad that I didn't jump to this because I do think it is a better version of D&D. I also think it's, like, kind of a better version than 5e.
I think so. It's so much easier to run, in my experience. The monsters, they're, like, really easy to scale. They have stat blocks that are just, like, a few square inches instead of having to do a whole page. And then that whole page doesn't even have their spell descriptions on it, having to go to the spells in the player's handbook in 5e and, like, get all their spells ready. The monsters were really focused in design. That was actually the big flaw in the game, was that they had some basic maths wrong in the monsters, and they did have to errata, like, the whole monster manual.
Oh no.
there were three monster manuals, but basically they were just like, oh, this, like, our playtesting base was wrong. And so they did re-release them, basically made them like have fewer hit points, but hit harder, which was a big design choice in this game as well. It's like, these monsters are probably going to die, right? It's not like, we're not lying to ourselves. These monsters are here to be defeated, but let's make them like fun to play for the DM and scary. Like when they punch, they get you.
Yes. I mean, I feel like as somebody who's GMing at the time, I probably would have appreciated all those things while not recognizing, like, not ever getting told that that's actually what was happening in there.
Right. Yeah.
I do also really appreciate the, like, even just the language framing of, like, how roles, the language around what a role is changed in this edition too, like, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's always something versus something, right? Like attack versus
yeah, no AC saving. Well, or... there are saving throws, but it's not.
It's
a reversed,
I mean, it's,
attack. You yeah. save against ongoing effects.
It's kind of the same thing behind the curtain, but even changing the, because so much of what is the difference between one role-playing game and another is changing the language and or framing of how the exact same mechanic is communicated.
Right.
And so I do feel like it's a meaningful change, especially when thinking about onboarding the
right.
like,
so
ability
has,
versus defense.
Yeah, everyone has AC, reflex, will, fortitude. Is that right? Yeah. But each of the non-AC ones, you choose your highest of two abilities. And so, like, will comes from wisdom or charisma. And so there's, like, fewer dump stats. And then oftentimes, you know, someone's hypnotic attack will be versus your will, which is in roughly the same range as an armor class. And so there's no, like, am I rolling to save? Am I rolling to attack? Are they rolling to attack? It's always just the attacker is rolling to attack against one of your defensive stats. Yeah, and a lot of this stuff got carried forward into like 13th Age and the Cypher system. Is that the other D21?
What a bad game, though. It's like they took all the worst, fucking terrible game.
Minions were a big thing. We won't get into it in this one because there's no, it's not in the player's handbook. But there were these cool monsters called minions that had one hit point, but they could get you. But it made it fun to be able to do like a cleave or a whirlwind attack or a fireball and take out like 20 minions.
That was the shit I loved. That
yeah.
was the shit. When I was playing like 3.5 Pathfinder, whatever, I loved feats. Not because like, I mean, I was deep into just like designing my little OC, but like usually mechanically. And I loved feats because they let me like plan out where I was going. I will also say that I played like 3.5 for, I don't know, probably just under a decade or whatever regularly. And I think we once got above level 10. So the whole, oh, you're level fucking 24 is yeah. like, unless you start at level 12, I just don't believe that's a place where people are living. Because how, I want someone to do this math for me. I don't want to do this math myself. If somebody feels inspired by this statement, please do this math for me. How frequently would you have to play, or how many sessions would it take to get from level 0 to level 20? And if you did that, like, say, bi-weekly, like a normal human, would you be able to do it in between D&D edition releases? Right? Like, how many actual years are between 4th and 5th edition? And how many 30-level characters can you get to if you play yeah. bi-weekly? Is what I want to know. Somebody do that for me.
A couple things. I feel like there was math. Maybe it was on D&D Beyond, but like, it's a, like, there's no level 20 characters. Because the D&D Beyond can like look at the data and say, you know, there, here's the level 20 characters. And there are level 20 characters because people will just make them or whatever. But like, the vast majority of characters are third level because you either play to that point or you start at that point, because that's where characters get interesting in 5th edition. And then there's like, you know, a few at 4th, a few at 5th, some make it to 10th, and then after that, like a huge drop off. Which is not, I don't know, not a criticism on its own. We played to level 30, but there was some fast leveling.
Yeah, it was like how many rules did you break to make that happen?
Yeah, well, because it was college and people were like graduating and leaving, and we wanted to finish this campaign. So we like were playing a few times a week at one point, and just like we would be a level for maybe two sessions and then level up again, which I don't know, was good. It was, I think, the right choice. It was fun. So you get an epic destiny as well in this game when you hit level 20, and they offer new abilities on top of your class stuff, but then offer, they tell you how you become immortal, how your immortality is achieved, which I think is a really fun, nearly story gamey kind of thing. The deadly trickster has to resist the temptation to take the dark path. When you complete your final quest, your legendary reputation is assured. The stories of your convoluted exploits live forever. If you stand with your companions and see them through their final quest, you are acclaimed a true hero. You are acquitted of past transgressions. Blah, 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 blah. If, however, you betray your comrades and disrupt the completion of their final quest, you are cast out by all. Your worst enemies welcome you to their courts as a newfound friend, and your name becomes a dark curse. I just like that stuff. There was one in a different player's handbook where you kind of become a hero of the people. All these epic destinies have a, like, when you die, do this thing that brings you back to life, like once, maybe just once, once per day, I forget. But the, like, hero of the people one is, if you die, you die. But one of the people you've inspired so much, like, steps into your place, and you've inspired them so powerfully that they just kind of become you. They've been training for this. They've been waiting. And so you are playing the same character, no stat changes, nothing. You're just a new person who was so obsessed with your old hero that they become them. And I really like that. It feels like a weird indie RPG moment.
I feel like there's so many D&D things that are like, oh my god, that's so cool. Why does this team not know what's cool about their game? You know,
right, why is that stuff hidden?
Yeah, and, like, why does it take me years of my life to get to the cool part of this game? Why do they not get cool until fifth level or whatever? You know, like, why am I spending? And I think it's fine to have a session where players aren't cool. Like, I obviously, we've talked about how much I think funnels are really cool or whatever. But I think I never want to see another first level D&D character in my entire life. Because also, most people don't keep playing.
Yeah.
You know, like, finding a core group that'll play forever is a meme. So, like, and also playing with different people is fun. And so, yeah, that thing where, oh, we're going to start at third level, we're going to start at first level, whatever, and then we're going to get into three sessions, and then scheduling is going to arise, and we're never going to play again, and I'm going to find a different group. I just feel like there is so much cool shit in there that is made shitty by all the other shit in there. Yeah, but I do think it's an interesting take. It feels so... It doesn't feel that incongruous, but it does feel a little bit incongruous for, like, what I conceptualize D&D as, because I did 3, 3.5, and then 5, which are very similar, right? Like, they're not, like, they really reverted back to a lot of 3.5 shit in 5, which was probably a mistake. Not was, probably is a mistake. Bad news.
Yeah.
I do, okay, why feats, though? Why feats and abilities? Justify this choice for me. You don't have to defend.
Abilities that you get as a character as you level up are mostly attacks. Sometimes they are utilities that modify your own attacks or, like, help your allies. Feats are, like, playing with the math inside those abilities. So I think part of it is, like, a feat. You can take a feat that's called, like, Astral Fire. And any attack you do that deals radiant or fire damage deals +1 damage. I think if they included that in the leveled abilities, you would be missing out on a new attack by taking that. And so I think it's a matter of, like, a balance. Like, you want to make sure everyone has the same number of attack and utility powers. Powers is what they're called. And then feats kind of let you mess with that stuff, or, like, the linguist feat, right? You learn 3 new languages. No one wants to do that if they're missing out on an attack power instead. But if you're guaranteed to get these cool attacks, it's like, oh, also I want to learn more languages. I assume that is why they're separated like that.
Because D&D is bad.
Well, because they worked really hard to balance the stuff in this, the numbers for attacks and everything. And I don't know. I haven't tried. I don't know if I can. When you are playing this version of D&D and you have everything on the grid and the DM is like putting in his all, shout out to Pete, who's been on the show and was running it for you for me. And you have a defender, a striker, a controller, and a leader, and they're all playing to the best of their abilities. Again, this is why I don't think this is for beginners, but when you have like, oh, the defender, which is basically the tank, like rushes in and marks this one person and then kicks this other one two squares away. And then the wizard's like, that activates my control field, which does this to them. And then the striker's like, that puts them in the perfect position for me to do this max damage thing. Like, it sings in a way that feels like, you know, my best video game fight moments. Everyone feels useful. Everyone feels cool. And I think a lot of that comes down to they put in what I consider an unimaginable amount of work on these numbers. I would get so bored so quick trying to balance all these numbers, but they did it. And so, but to do that, they had to really focus on the combat stuff. They had to focus on those powers to the point where a lot of kind of role play character development stuff outside of combat, they had to stick in a different section. They had to become feats. They had to become rituals. And yeah, I can see people have argued like 4E is only about combat. All the rules are about combat. And I sort of get that. But because all the good rules are in combat, I then felt more free, you know, in the role play moments to just be like, I have this linguist feat. This kind of describes my character, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think that's, and I mean, I think that's totally true and fair. I think so much of my D&D hate comes down to it misrepresenting itself.
Yeah.
Because I also, like, I have those moments in 3.5. Like, that's why feats were fun in 3.5, is because, like, oh, I finally stacked up all these feats together, and now I can do this really cool thing that interfaces with one of the other characters' really cool things, and we've, like, been working towards this, and, like, I think we've said this before somewhere. Nope, I was talking to somebody else recently about the whole like, oh yeah, that show gets really good on episode 10.
I hate that.
It fucking sucks because of course the show gets good because you've invested so much of your own time that it has to be good. You make it good. The show doesn't necessarily get good. You make it good with your mind. This is how media consumption works a little bit, you know? Like it's not, and that doesn't mean it can't get better over time, but those statements are usually based a whole lot in our personal investment. And so of course, like by the time I get to a place where I can do Whirlwind Attack in D&D, if I've played all the way through to get Whirlwind Attack in 3.5, I care so much. I have put so much of my own time and mental space and labor into making this game good that of course it's going to be good for me then, you know? Which is a very different thing than, yeah, it's good for other people. It's like good for a lot of people, for the mass of people. It's good for people who haven't put that time in. They're just like such different statements.
This version, like you can get Whirlwind Attack at like level 2 or 3 or whatever early on. You can start with like cleave stuff and you don't have to build a chain of feats.
And have like, -4 and -2 in your
offense. Right, exactly. Like at one point you just get to say like, oh, and lots of people end up having an attack that is you hit everyone around you and they flavor them in different ways and give them different extra effects and stuff. And so I think that's, you know, a way that they have addressed that. And there aren't as many kind of trap feats of like, yeah, you have to start at -4 or whatever. This was, I think another big part of fourth edition was like, there's no negatives. Like you only get straight roll or rising bonuses.
Extremely important and quality of life.
Yeah. Upgrade. Feats just become like, oh, my cleric, I sure am picking a lot of abilities that deal radiant damage. I'm going to juice those with this feat. Like the feats are much less important and just kind of provide you different little flavors. You know, it's almost like equipment in a lot of video games of like, oh, I'm doing a crit build and this armor gives me +1% chance to crit. I'm going to pop that on. You don't build around the feats in this edition. You spice the feats in. It's harder to, you know, you already have these great builds with these cool powers. the feats just give you a little control and a little flavor.
I believe you. I think my like literal irritation with feats is that they didn't lay them out the same as everything else.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you've put all this work into all this balance. You put all this work into this design of what a little like ability block looks like. I wish that they all looked the same.
Oh, I mean, I think part of that is because some feats give you powers.
Totally. And also some of them just like you gain two languages. So why would you need a block for that? Right. I get it. I'm just saying I want the design philosophy that led them to we should make attacks look like spells so that everybody has the same visual language they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
To translate over to all of the ability, like all of the components of your character. Like if you're going to give me that, I want all these little like module effectively card systems.
Yeah.
I understand why they didn't. I just want it. Because it like, yes, it would.
You can do, you can relay out the, do the, redo the layout of fourth edition.
I don't hate myself that much. Imagine. I'm sure somebody will do that and they'll do it really. I'm sure somebody has been like, I'm laying out this D&D book for as a passion project.
People do it with BX all the time.
Okay. Do we feel prepared to launch into our thing we're going to focus on for the next little bit?
What are we going to focus on for the next little bit?
Aaron has forgot already that they agreed. Just do a thing. We were going to talk about off-ramping from D&D.
Oh, right.
And a little bit in this episode, but also like maybe do a couple main feed episodes, maybe do a zine quest episode, a zine club episode or two that is just like a Patreon episode or two that is about like kind of the culture of off-ramping, some of the philosophies of off-ramping, some of the things that we see like make off-ramping hard, like things that I would consider somewhat misunderstandings of how different games work. And when you like bring D&D brain into other systems and then think that system is bad because you're trying to play it like it's D&D, you know, like all of those like moments of play that are hard, but also like it is hard to, when you've been so entrenched in this whole world, how does one get out? How do you exit the
cult? I truly forgot we were doing that.
I know, I could hear it in your
voice.
And
so I did not prep anything. I thought that was going to be a different episode.
I think I read it as we were going to do like multiple little conversations.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. Everyone at work has just been sick. So I've just been working all the time. And then my car has a flat tire. So I've been busing. So I just have like 10-hour days every day.
No, that's the worst.
I've been reading a lot on the bus. That's been nice. But so yeah, I apologize to our listeners and to you. I'm here. I'll riff on it, but
I'm fine with introducing it as a thing we are going to be doing over the next couple episodes, and this might be why we are changing the format a little bit for the holidays.
Yeah,
I'm fine to even just talk about what it's going to be, not the specifics of it, because we have been chatting a little bit. There's been a lot of conversations in the Discord also about like the whole video essay culture and how you love video essays, and I have a hard time with them, but they are kind of intriguing, and we are not video people here. We are hideous gremlins that wish to not be perceived visually with your eyes. Do not perceive us with your eyes.
But listen up.
Yeah. And thinking about how we could do something that maybe has a little bit more, I don't know, essay format. I guess every, like, us being conversational, I would say, is kind of an essay format, but a little bit more of a, like, structure, thesis, things behind it. And I think off-ramping from D&D is a fun topic of conversation because it lets us talk about, like, some of the systems that we've done in these 51 episodes. How many? A bazillion episodes.
Right. I think this will be, like, the 51st official main feed.
Ooh. But kind of like reflecting on some of those games and like, do they, maybe we'll have a highlight episode of here's the best ways to like get off of D&D's dick. That's what the episode will be titled.
those many inches of D&D books. I'm not judging. I still have many inches of 4E. I do want to play it. I want to run a long campaign.
I have all my books. This is not, I have not, I keep thinking about getting rid of them. I have one that is collectible that I keep being like, I would rather have this money than this book.
Yeah.
But yes, it is not a, it's not meant to be like, hey, y'all, you should leave D&D behind, even though that's genuinely what I think, for a number of reasons, not the least of which is never give wizards any money, but I still love Magic the Gathering, so I myself am a hypocrite. But also just like, if you want to do that, what actually are some ways to do that? What are some things, what are some like mental hurdles you might need to get over? Which I think the biggest one that I'm kind of interested in talking about is because we've talked about PBTA because we've read so many PBTA books, but I think they're one of the things that I really was hoping we would talk, not today, but in the future.
Yeah. No, let's do
is,
it.
Is like, how do you approach PBTA? Like, how do you learn PBTA if you're coming from D&D? Because I think it is hard. It took me years to understand what PBTA was trying to do because I kept trying to think about it through a D&D lens. And I think that, you know, like Dungeon World really ruined that. it's a bad game for many reasons, but like it really tried to say you can play this like D&D, and I think that you can play anything however you want, but you're not gonna have the best time, or you're not, that's not where it sings, you know?
Yeah.
And so having a little bit more of a like philosophy of PBTA play chat I think might be fun, especially since it's 100% your wheelhouse and I'm in my PBTA era, is one episode I think would be fun.
Yeah.
Highlight episode. Just here's a bunch of games that do a thing D&D does better. I don't know. You know, some cool stuff. It's because it's also for me, it's about taking like a little bit of a holiday break from like.
You're moving.
I'm moving. We're just going to chat as opposed to like all my books are starting to go in boxes. They will be inaccessible for a while. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm into it. It was a good idea the first time you said it, and then I forgot it just as a little treat to myself to say what a good idea this is once again.
Okay, fine. So for this, then, do we move on to appendix now? Is there other fourth edition
sure.
things?
No, I think we
do. Do you want to tell us a tale of that happened in your gameplay? My appendix now. It's kind of like somebody telling us, just like writing a story out of playing D&D.
Yeah, I played a paladin. And there were still like character optimization boards, right? You would go to a forum for 4E and they would say, here's the best way to build the best paladin. These are the choices you make. And so like, you know, at some level, the paladin could get a utility power that was like you can communicate telepathically with your allies up to 20 feet or whatever, and all the boards were like, don't take this because if you take this you're missing out on this other damage dealing thing. And I had already taken it and I was like, oh no, it's gonna ruin my paladin. And then we had this weird session where we were all kind of separated, not in a fight but just like an embarrassing social situation. And I got to telepathically connect with my friends and we got to bolster each other and get through this weird social situation. And that felt really good, which is just a way of saying like a lot of people that get deep into these games have a specific approach to play. And that's cool. It's cool to be into your hobby, but also you can play other ways.
I'm currently trying to find a copy based on a Quinn's recommendation. A shout out to Quinn's of second edition Descent board game. because when you're describing that, all I could think was like, I just feel like D&D wants to be a board game.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you look at the descendants of 4E, like Gloomhaven and Descent are huge. Like you can draw a direct line, and now like Lancer as well. I think we have multiple copies of Descent 2E at my game store if you want one.
Oh, yes, I do. I'm gonna make that happen, and then I'm gonna send you, I have a box to send you anyway.
Cool.
We're secret Santa-ing. We're not secret. We're
public Santa-ing.
We're public non-denominational holiday gifting.
The famous Christian Santa Claus.
yeah, because I feel like as you're describing, like, so much of that, I remember going to those forums for, like, 3.5. Like, I remember engaging with that whole culture of, like, how do you optimize this? What is your build? All of this stuff. I remember being in that mindset.
Yeah.
I also remember caring about masculinity. And I'm not saying necessarily that those things are aligned, but I do feel like they're aligned. Yeah. And I feel like I came out of that culture and just have such an aversion to the whole concept of min-maxing, both right. in RPGs and in video games. Like, I just hate, I fundamentally despise the idea that there is a correct way to experience play and there is a best way to experience play and that it is universally true for a game. And so I hate games that design into min-maxing and I hate players that really engage with min-maxing. I don't hate players. Whatever. I hate in the player mode. I don't hate them as people. I don't hate the players.
Not the game.
Yeah. I also hate the game. But I do like this because it is just fundamentally this statement about there is a correct way to do this. There is the best right. way to do this. And I just can't get behind that as an idea that I think anybody should put any effort or time into, which is different than when those ideas are kind of taken. Like, I don't think that a strategy game requires min-maxing. And when you're talking about fourth edition, the experience of playing it, but also how it's meant to be on a grid, you're talking about a strategy game effectively, right? And strategy games are fun. And when they're really good, they don't have a min-max, right? Like, they have a lot right. of interchangeable pieces.
You can choose between these two equally good choices.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it just, like, changes how it happens. It doesn't. Right. change your chance of success or whatever. So I tend to be like quite anti like build culture and all of that kind of stuff. Or I mean, builds are fine again if they're fun and equal, but it's the min-maxing that really gets to me. And I think that was like once I stepped outside of D&D and realized that, and like I feel like I had to like unlearn min-max brain, you know. and now I can't look back, and I do think it paralleled unlearning masculinity, but you know, everybody has their own path. I'm not saying you should also unlearn masculinity. I am, though. Yeah, and I do wonder, like, is the best version of this Descent? Is the best version of this Gloomhaven? You know, like, is that the legacy of D&D? Is that the positive yeah. legacy of D&D? Is actually in the realm of board game design.
Yeah, and like the, you know, JP, previous guest, friend of yours in the Discord, has been posting about his experience with 5 Parsecs from Home, which is like a solo miniatures-based skirmish game. So you get your little guys, you put them on a board, you're measuring distances and stuff. But because it's solo, it sets up these campaigns with the bad guys, the villains, that have, they call it like AI or automation or whatever, like, this bad guy will try to get distance to take a range shot. This bad guy will charge the closest person, whatever. And a cool thing that game does is it has like downtime in between battles. And so one of your little guys might be like, oh, I drank too much. I show up with a hangover at the next battle, you know? And so it kind of builds these character scenes into, a miniature skirmish game. And I think D&D 4E did that really well of saying like, we're mostly combat. We're going to make this combat as good as we can. And then we have like skill challenges that make role-based role-playing, rolling to like figure out the mystery or whatever, pretty interesting. They had nice rules of like measuring your successes versus your failures. You might need to get this many successes. You could use a skill towards those successes or to help people, like kind of gamified it. And then outside of that was just sort of like, you don't need to worry about, like, you can role play, you can talk, but there was no idea of like, oh, the other pillars are exploration and social interaction. They're like, no, those things are fun. Here's some structure for it if you need it. But we're a combat game. Most of our rules are about that. And we tried to make them real good.
Yeah. I do think that sometimes you can only do one thing really good. And also, yeah. like, that's noble. Like, do one thing really right. good, you know? Like, it's not like you failed at the other two things. It's like you picked your focus, and that probably means you made it way better than somebody who didn't pick their focus.
Right.
I just opened Twitter and Dungeons & Dragons owners lays off 1,100 staff 2 weeks before Christmas to keep
Hasbro
fucking
fired 20%.
So I'm going to go, I'm going to reiterate my statement that y'all have to stop giving them your money. You have to stop playing Dungeons & Dragons. You have to stop this shit. They are mega evil. I will be less tempered in my fucking stop with the Dungeons & Dragons.
What if they pirate their books?
I mean, as long as they are giving their money to a different other game, I mean, yeah, sure, pirate everything. I don't fucking care. But also the mental damage of aligning yourself identity-wise with a company that is this shit. It's just,
please. Max is the new police, and there is only one crime.
Dungeons
and he's
Dragons.
Coming for you.
Yeah. Great. Wonderful. So, you know, listen to this episode about 4th edition and how it was kind of cooler than all the other editions, and don't play it. Or do. It's fine, you know.
I mean, you can't give money to Wizards of the Coast to get these books.
That's true. That's
like, they're no longer print. I don't think you can buy them digitally even.
Go buy a secondhand copy from
I can
a
get
local
you some copies of these books if y'all need some D&D 4E books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you insist upon playing D&D, make sure that you are buying everything used and that you are supporting a local shop.
Oh, I meant PDFs.
Or steal it. That's the only ethical ways. This is the only ethical consumption under D&D capitalism. Theft or secondhand.
My appendix now is read the Player's Handbook 2 and 3 and the Dungeon Master's
Guide 2
for D&D 4E.
Why are you encouraging such toxic behavior? Why are you...
I wrote it down. I have to stick to it.
Psychic damage. It's not
Player's Handbook 2, you can be a minotaur, or maybe that's 3.
I do love a minotaur. Well, I'm back.
4E was very much like, you can be a weird guy in this one. Here's all the weird guys you can be.
I love being a weird guy. I have never actually read in any of the systems, even the ones I was in for a long time, I've never read any of the extended Player's Handbooks. I've read a bunch of the like supplement, like Essential Gnome or whatever, but
right.
Not a lot of the...
Yeah, these Player's Handbooks are cool because they're just like, here's gnomes, y'all wanted gnomes, here's barbarians, bards. You know, they would give you all the, you know, stuff that you're used to, and then they would also be like, this one also has Rune Priest. We're trying something weird with Rune Priest. You can pick runes. You know, this one has all the psychic classes in it.
Psychic damage. Player's Handbook 3.
There you go, yeah.
I'm so mad. I'm so mad that you didn't bring us a cool book. No, I'm not mad at all. I am reading on a recommendation from a dear close friend, NPCs by Drew Hayes, which I don't know anything about Drew Hayes. I'm reading the book because it was recommended. And so if they happen to be terrible, please let me know. But I don't think they are. It is a book about... about NPCs becoming heroes. And it's pretty charming. It's like, it's also self-published, which, you know, we love. It is pretty charming. If you want to have like a nostalgic classic fantasy moment, or you want to read a novel that reads like it was literally written after a D&D campaign was played, this is it. But it's kind of cute. It has a couple hang-ups about gender, a couple like, oh, women don't do this or whatever, that one of the characters is, you know, trying to counteract, but still it's like, yeah, it's written by a dude 8 years ago or whatever who plays games, so some of that is there. It's not nearly as bad as a bunch of the old like pulp fantasy. It's just a little bit of it is there. Yeah, I'm kind of really enjoying it. It's like, as I'm doing this, like, move, really stressful whole life change, like changing the whole what I thought the next chunk of years of my life was going to be thing. It's like it's a turn brain off. Nice, nice book. Nice, snuggly book. And it perfectly feels like a session of D&D in a good way. If there is a good way for that.
Come to our Discord. Link in the show notes.
We might be reading the Iliad.
We might be reading the Iliad. There's a new translation of the Iliad by Emily Wilson. Her translation of the Odyssey was so good. I really loved it. So I'm also running a speed rune jam.
Yeah.
And so if you are, especially if you're like a new designer or, you know, don't have a lot of experience or don't have a community, like it's a really easy game to add something to. And there's a little channel in our Discord to hang out, and it doesn't have to be game design. You can write a weird poem.
I'm going to make a little music track.
Yeah. So come hang out if you want. Patreon.com/RTFMcast if you want to support us. We would appreciate that.
Are you going to run some speedrun in the Discord? Should I run a speedrun in the Discord?
I bet we could get someone, one of us, to run some. Yeah.
In January? I don't
know. Yeah, anything else? I did also put out a free zine of all my favorite books. So if you are mad that I suggested D&D, all my favorites of this year, there's a free zine on my itch. Yeah, I don't know. It's the end of the year.
It's one of my highlights.
We're going to be really busy. And so I hope you all get some chances to rest and
eat a good food.
Eat some good food. I'm in my soup season.
I'm full of sausage roll right now, which may be related to being inches deep into D&D, but who knows?
D&D is kind of the sausage roll of role-playing games.
It is, like, pretty greasy. I do often regret it after the fact. You're right.
I think that's how the show should end.
Great. Good day.